Welcome to New Thinking for a New World, a Telberg Foundation podcast. I am Alan Stoga, your host. Each week, I bring you conversations with people who think differently about the great issues that are shaping our world. Geopolitics, disruptive tech, mass migration, the changing climate, culture wars, all of it is grist for our mill. I hope you enjoy listening. I also hope you will let me know what you think and that you join the conversation at telbergfoundation.org. And now for today's episode of New Thinking for a New World. The 12-day war between Iran and Israel continues to resonate, even if the world's attention has shifted elsewhere. In this segment of Telberg's recent webinar on the war, Hussein Mousavian, Abraham Silver, and Francesca Borri explored what positive developments, state to state and people to people, could potentially emerge from the carnage of war. Not old, failed solutions, but new thinking. Listen and then tell us and them what you think.
Francesca, before we started, you were talking off camera about trust, and to the point that I think both Abraham and Hussein have just made, there is no trust. Obviously, there's no trust between Israel and Iran. There's not much trust for anyone in the Middle East on any subject, put aside the United States, which certainly suffers from that same deficit of trust. How do you change that?
Look, but because we are all stuck, you know, on October 7th, I mean, for all of us in Israel and Palestine, both sides of the wall, is still October 7th. And really, on a personal level, I think if you ask each of us, you know, we are probably not talking to whoever is, you know, out of Israel and Palestine, because we all think, oh, you know, no one can understand unless, you know, is here. And the point is, at some point, sooner or later, you know, October 7th will be over, you know. And we will all start to process what happened, you know, both Israelis and Palestinians. And so, of course, we will have change, you know. I totally agree with Avram. I mean, I see an opportunity somehow, you know. This is a little bit like before the Arab Spring, you know, when really the gap between, you know, the society and the leadership is too wide. And it's a young society, no? So we are speaking of you know, uranium. And think of my generation. Well, we are speaking actually of lithium, you know, for we are focused on solar energy, on, you know, the energy transition. Uranium and nuclear weapons are really, you know, a debate that, you know, we studied in history books, you know, for our university exams, you know. Sounds like, you know, the Soviet Union is back again speaking of nuclear weapons. I mean, we are not interested in uranium. We are interested, you know, in our future. So that's the point, you know. When the gap is so wide, you know, I expect the unexpected, you know. I expect the black swan, basically. And I expect, you know, Israelis and Palestinians to find the common ground. We usually, you know each other, help each other. And as soon as the world around forgets us, you know, we basically share the same land. So definitely, you know, this will be an opportunity as soon as we start to process what happened. For now, you know, nobody's processing anything because we are living in an emergency day by day. But as soon, you know, when probably there will be new elections in Israel, or a government change in Tehran, as soon as there would be, you know, an end somehow to the active fighting, to the active war, we will start process what happened, you know, and there would be change, no doubt.
Abraham, can you imagine ways to develop trust with Iran, Israeli trust with Iran?
First of all, I can definitely imagine trust between Israel and the Palestinians with Francesca.
Right. That's why I didn't ask that question. I knew that asked.
Trust with Iran is difficult, and I think Hussein actually said it as well, which is, on the one hand, we have had actions which threaten them, and they have spent the last 20 years with language that is threatening us. So how do you get beyond that? Both of us feel threatened by each other, and legitimately so. So where do you move from there? And so I think that, honestly, I do think it's a real challenge. No time soon, they have to change their rhetoric. We have to change our behavior. I think that that's a difficult ask. I don't think it's impossible, but I do think it's really difficult.
The obvious question is whether the war was enough of an exclamation point to force into that difficult space. Hussein?
I believe there is a chance. First of all, we need a direct negotiations between Iran and the U.S. Second, the issue cannot be single issue on nuclear, because I really do not believe the issue between Iran and the U.S. is about a democracy or human right or even nuclear. The issue is about the region. Therefore, the U.S. and Iran, they need to agree on one major principles. Iranians, they would not harm the U.S. interest in the region, and the U.S. also would respect the legitimate and natural interest of Iran in the region. This principle needs to be negotiated, but first of all, they need to agree. The second important issue, I believe, is about Iran and Israel, and the most important principle is that Iran and Israel to stop threatening each other, the existence of each other. I mean, if there would be an agreement by President Trump on these two major principles, and then there would be negotiations based on international rules and regulations, the first issue should be and has to be about nuclear, because this has been negotiating for 20 years. And frankly speaking, JCPOA was the most comprehensive agreement during the history of non-proliferation, with the highest level of transparency, inspection measures, with the most comprehensive limits on the nuclear program, which no other NPT member has ever accepted, but Iran accepted. Nevertheless, we need to be realistic. President Trump does not want only JCPOA. He wants JCPOA plus. That's why it is for years, Alan, you know, we have been starting to write before JCPOA. In 2013, with new Princeton nuclear scientists, we proposed a nuclear consortium in the Middle East. And in 2015, also, we wrote the next article. 2023, even in June, we wrote an article. We proposed a nuclear consortium in the Persian Gulf, where Iran would have the centrifuges. Enrichment would be in Oman, a yellow cake, a UF6, and the stockpile of enriched uranium would be in Saudi Arabia, and trade and the headquarters would be in Emirates. Therefore, in our proposal, there was not going to have any enrichment in Iran. It was before war. I mean, it was published even, I think, 2 weeks before war. That's why this could be JCPOA plus. I mean, Iran and the U.S., they can agree on JCPOA plus a regional consortium. If this is the principles on the nuclear, we would be able to go and pass the nuclear issue. And then, as I said, the two major issues would be for Iran and the U.S. to agree on the regional issues, not to harm the legitimate or legal or the natural role interests of each other, and then would be about Iran and Israel. This has been, you know, Alan, you received my articles. Even 3 years ago, I wrote an article published in the Journal of Defense Ministry of United States that I proposed ceasefire between Iran and Israel. And I proposed there should be a mediation. And I think U.S. is in good position to do this mediation. When Iranian and Israelis, they would agree that they should not and they would not threaten the existence of each other, then they can see it. I mean, the U.S. can negotiate to define the elements of such a principle. I think there is a chance if there is a goodwill.
Put aside the U.S. for a moment because they're not represented here. Abraham, can you imagine the Israeli leadership working in the framework that Hussein just described?
Yeah, so I think what Hussein described is really amazing. The answer, of course, in the current iteration of the government is no, obviously. I mean, this government is on its last legs. That means within a year. But for the moment, the answer is no. But Hussein's painting a larger, broader picture of a longer-term understanding. So whatever new government would come in, when there'll be a new government, the answer is quite possibly. In other words, any other government that's going to come in is going to look towards building bridges, towards creating other circumstances rather than the narrow worldview of this current government. So long-term, the answer is yes to your question. Short-term, the answer is absolutely not.
I agree with you, Abraham.
Yeah, I agree.
Does there need to be, Hossein, going back to Iran, clearly there's going to be a shift in leadership sooner or later. As we just said for Israel, sooner or later, Bibi is not immortal. He's been there 15 of the last 30 years. Presumably he's to the end of his time, then the beginning of his time. Presumably the same thing is true in Iran in terms of supreme leader, who will be followed by someone. Does that change have to happen before we can get to this place where new possibilities can be explored?
See, Alan, really no one knows what's going to happen after the current supreme leader. That's why I really prefer, if there is going to be agreement, it's better to have during the time of Ayatollah Khamenei, because he is very powerful. And he, if he decides, then the radicals in Iran would be quiet. Therefore, and that's why he really didn't like JCPOA, but he agreed. And when he agreed, it was implemented correctly with zero failure for full 3 years. That's why it's better to use that. Because, I mean, the other very positive issue is that he really believes in his fatwa. Nuclear and all WMDs are haram religiously. I really don't know whether the next leader would believe the same religiously or not. I mean, because there are another school of thought that they are saying, why Israel, India, Pakistan, everybody they have, why we should not have. And you know, Shah was after nuclear bomb also. And these are some opportunities, but no one knows, Alan, how long it would take. I mean, this has been discussing for decades, but Ayatollah Khamenei is ruling Iran for 35, 36 years, and we have had many changes in Washington, but he still is leader, and no one knows whether this would be 5 years, 10. It is in the hand of God. We need to use the opportunity currently, you know.
And I think that may all be the point. We've had this several years of war sequentially. The region has changed, just objectively it has changed compared to what it was on October 6th. And the obvious question is, did it change for the better? Is there that possibility? Francesca, you've talked about youth and leadership. Abraham, you've talked about life after Bibi. And Hossein, you've argued, you've laid out a possible framework that requires not just Israel and Iran to work together, but requires the Americans to play a positive role, which has certainly not been the case. How do we leave our audience with a little more optimism, a little more possibility? Can you guys imagine? Well, let me ask the question differently. Have we just seen the last war between Israel and Iran, or is there a next one?
No one knows if there would be a next war, because to my understanding, Prime Minister Netanyahu and even President Trump's assumption was that a big plan that they would bring a total collapse in Iran within 3, 4, 5 days. And this was the original plan. And I think Bibi had already promised President Trump that he's going to make it. That's why Trump gave a green light, NATO gave a green light, but it failed. And I think the level and the depth of damages to Israel has been also disaster for Israel, because the security of Israel has never been, after the wars in 1970 or 67, has never been challenged like this war. It was very bad for Iran. It was very bad for Israel, even for the U.S. And we all are monitoring the international public opinion, which is not in favor of Israel. We all understand even the public opinion in Europe, in the U.S. is against the Israeli behavior in Gaza treating Palestinians. I think Israel is not winner at the end, because now there is a big fear in Muslim countries. I think before October 7, there was a good chance for Abraham Accord. And assuming if it would have continued, let's say Iran would oppose, but the other Arab countries, they would agree. But now there is a little chance. And I think those countries agreed even with Abraham Accord. They are under question in Muslim countries. Imagine about 2 billion Muslims are thinking and seeing the Gaza situation, where 2.23 million Palestinians are displaced. I mean, 60,000, or by Harvard calculation, 400,000 people, they have been killed, women, children. And as Francisca said, that it is completely leveled to earth. I mean, there is no Gaza. I mean, all this in long term has negative consequences. I think we may be happy in short term, but I really don't believe this is not going to have a positive long term consequences.
Abraham, and then Francesca, do you agree?
I don't agree. I think that I understand the issues that exist. If you look at where we were on October 6th and where we are today, Syria is a very different place. Lebanon is a very different place. The world is a very different place, and there are different opportunities that exist. The Palestinians, certainly what happened in Gaza is awful. And like I said, that needs a re-understanding of the world, holding our hands to make that situation better. But in general, the world has great opportunities that it didn't have, from the Abraham Accords to just regional different shifting power in the region. So I think Syria is a great example of, if everyone plays it the right way, al-Shara is trying to turn towards being open to the world, and the world needs to be turned, including Israel, towards him. And that in itself is a different dynamic. So I think that Alan had made a reference to the fact that, yeah, we sat in that bomb shelter during the Iran part of the war, with the understanding that, hey, we're sitting here now because now, after this, the world will be a better place. And we definitely see those opportunities.
Francesca, opportunities?
Yes, look at Syria. There are opportunities. At the same time, as Hussein said, the future is quite bleak for Israel, because the point is, if Palestinians disappear, as now, they're actually disappearing, they become something even more dangerous for Israel, like an abstract symbol of all the injustice, you know. And Israel, you see it in Europe, and Israelis and the Jews after that, you know, will be targeted, you know, basically blamed for everything. And then there is, the other main victim, along the 60,000 dead of Gaza and all the Israelis who were killed on October 7th. The main victim for all of us is international law. So we got used in the past months, even before that, but especially, after October 7th, that basically, you do whatever you want to do, and there is no reaction. There is no, the International Criminal Court will pay a heavy price, for the arrest warrant against Netanyahu, which means, you will see the sanctions will be, this has always been typical of international courts. Once there is a step forward, there is, there are two steps back. There is no international law. So, and then from conflict to conflict, from war to war, you see basically there are no rules anymore. So suddenly Netanyahu wants to bomb southern Syria because he thinks, that something is going on, something going wrong with the Druze, and then, you know, you bomb it. And nothing, you know. And this is true in Gaza, this is true in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iran, or the other way around, you know, in Israel. No, and which is for the first time has been under missile attack. The world can't work this way.
It's hard to know where to go except to thank you all for this. We've agreed that we need international law. We've agreed that we need leadership. And we have agreed that we need, if we're not going to honor the past, we have to invent a better future. But we're struggling with how, other than sitting in bomb shelters, hoping that it's the last time in a bomb shelter, how we're going to do that. I certainly don't have any solutions to it. So I think I want to end there. Thank you very much. And we'll do this again soon. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of New Thinking for a New World. I'm Alan Stoga, podcast host, and I look forward to your joining our next conversation. Remember, tell us what you think at telbergfoundation.org.